Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our full year results call. As usual, please take note of our disclaimer. I will now hand you over to Olaf to present the results.
Yeah, thank you, Sabrina, and welcome everybody to our results call. Today, we want to give color to the last fiscal year, but also talk quite a bit about the future ahead. Before we do that, let me just emphasize that the year 17-18 has been extremely important for us because it marks a year where our full focus of wholesale is going to come to life to the full extent. And this has a reason, and the reason is not only our origin is wholesale, but we are very much convinced that wholesale has a lot of opportunity for value creation. And that was the main theme for 2017-18, to make sure that we actually start to be much more active when it comes to implementing the value creation. In the pure word, it was about activation. So looking at the year, we will tell you a lot about the numbers and the figures, and Christian will go into detail into the results and explain the metrics. We'll also explain you why we are leaving the year 17-18, which was very difficult, also in regard of the guidance which we had to adjust earlier this year. But it was also significant in regard of the transformation to become a pure wholesaler within the business, but also, of course, in the way how we structure the group. And we kicked off the process to dispose our hypermarket business in the foreseeable future, in the next 4 to 6 months. The development is also encouraging because we see that our strategy starts to work out better and better, and our growth in the two core target groups, HoReCa and Trader, is material and gives us also very positive expectation for the foreseeable future. So the year 18-19, which we'll talk about at the very end, will be about intensification. Now, you have seen our guidance and you might wonder, well, how does it come that I now say we are more confident with the progress that comes from 17-18 moving into 18-19, and still we guide for a softener EBITDA, like 2 to 6% below previous year. Well, the reason is, number one, yes, we will continue to intensify our transformation, and therefore we will incur one or the other cost, like the launch of Metro Markets, which will happen in 19, like further digitalization of the inside of Metro. But yes, we also do expect that while we are positive about the trend improvement in Russia, and we're actually positive based on the current trading improvement, that we will make progress on the top line. We do clearly say top line comes first and then bottom line will follow, which means that at the beginning of the year, we would expect softer EBITDA in Russia and for the full year as a whole, while we do expect a trend improvement in top line and, as I said, a trend improvement at the bottom line then to follow. Those are the main reasons why we are guiding for a softer EBITDA for the coming year, but we'll go into much more detail to give you the full insight and explanation for that. But by no means we are bearish, and by no means we are bearish about Russia, quite the opposite. So let's start with a review on how we developed over the last years towards becoming a really fully focused wholesaler. And let's remind ourselves where we come from. In 2012, Metro was a fully diversified group with four different trading formats, three of them in retail, one of them in wholesale. And at the time, we knew we have to change this because every single one of them was exposed to magnificent need for change in regard of the business model and our attractiveness for customers. So at the time, we started the review of every single one of the entities we used to own. And at the same time, we were clear we need to dismantle the conglomerate and get really fully focused. Difficult to foresee how fast that could go, but very clearly high on our agenda already in 2012. And with a transaction selling Real International to Group Auchan in 2012 and selling one or the other wholesale country actually by the time, where we knew that we would not be able to succeed, like Macro UK, we continued year by year to conduct one transaction after the other. And you see that our share of wholesale has come up significantly. And, of course, The transaction selling off our department store business in 2015 was a landmark transaction because it helped us to really strengthen our balance sheets. Between 2012 and 2017, we were able to deliver the group by more than $5 billion. Another important step, of course, was the demerger in 2017, which has created then the precondition for the last step in this transformation from a diversified trading group into a fully focused wholesaler. This will be concluded in this fiscal year. Therefore, we also made the choice to go for IFRS 5 treatment for the Real business as discontinued. I'm sure you will understand that that was also the reason and the necessity to change our reporting structure, which I also understand creates quite a bit of complexity, but we are here to give you full insight on all the things that you are now asking for, and will help to make the numbers work for you. Now, the decision to move on with a transaction for the German hypermarket business was only possible after we concluded the business transformation exercise, which was kicked off in spring, well, summer 2015, actually late summer 2015. We reviewed with the management team how we would need to think about the future viability of a hypermarket business in the German market. At the time, to be quite frank, we had quite a lot of concern whether we can find a good right-to-play argumentation for a big box, large assortment player in a market where 44% is actually conducted by discount. The answer was the Markthalle concept, the food lover principle, where we combine Germany's largest assortment that is offered on a national basis with innovative services, customer curation, and a food court like it's not available in any other place in Germany. The model worked out very well on traffic and on top line. We repeated the model in Braunschweig in October this year. By the way, we incurred $1 million of turnover at the opening day, which is a record which we have never seen before. We also started to apply modules of the food lover principle into other markets, into 19 to be exact, to see whether we can achieve positive momentum without high CapEx. Also, this is working. So we can see that big box, large assortment, food retail in Germany has a future. It just needs a new interpretation. What we were struggling with is the question, can we be relevant on the non-food side? Clearly there, our decline was substantial over the years. Our corresponding answer online was not satisfying. That changed in 2016 with the acquisition of Hitmeister. Then in March 17, we merged it with Real.de. Ever since, we are growing very, very fast. We ended the year with a gross merchandise value of 380 million. The growth itself is in the magnitude of 90%. We will surpass $500 million of euros in gross merchandise value transactions very, very soon. This is only possible because Hitmeister brought capabilities to the table that we didn't have, not only technology-wise, but also commercially. Having more than 5,000 merchants connected and offering 12 million SKUs has become a huge differentiator and has led to the fact that Real.de is one of the most vibrant marketplaces at this moment in time. We will, by the way, take all these learnings very seriously when we will apply that for our wholesale model. Now, the remaining question was, is it feasible to come to competitive labor cost? Because we knew we can come to commercial benefits through the cooperation in RTG, where we have teamed up with six partners, seven in total, to go for synergies in purchasing, supply chain, and other areas. The tariff, however, we have been addressing for more than 4 years, that we are disadvantaged by 30% roughly on labor costs against the most relevant competitors. The agreement we had with the union was substantial because the commitment we got with signature from the leadership of the union was giving us comfort that either we will have a reform of the national tariff, and if that is not feasible, we will get a tailor-made tariff just for Real. Upon us learning that the union will not stick to the promise and the contractual signed commitment, we had to withdraw from the contract with massive consequences. Massive consequences which led to the change in our guidance, because we had to step up on labor costs based on labor inflation as of 2015, which we had not passed on to our workforce. In other words, our people as of October 2018 are earning 9% more than in October 2017. This is the incremental tariff upswing which was halted at the time of this interim agreement. At the same time, we moved all operations into a new legal entity that is enjoying a way better tariff. But of course, we got a lot of signals that this will not be as easy to hire people and that we would not succeed in actually attracting and then retaining people under the new tariff. You see it on the chart, bottom right. The truth is way opposite to what was told. We have hired more than 3,600 people under the new tariff, and it shows Real remains a very attractive employer. And therefore, the last component of the future viability of Real has been achieved in last fiscal year. And that is the reason why we came to the conclusion it's now the right moment in time to start with a transaction to give Real the way into the independence. We told you at the time we had to inform at the beginning of the process, according to the stock market communication regulation in Germany, this was without any choice, and we then said within 6 to 8 months we will complete this transaction. Now we are spot on the timeline, and we are very comfortable with a prognosis that within 4 to 6 months, now 2 months have passed, that we will be able to conclude the transactions. We are happy with the progress made on our own preparation. The data room is open, but we are also very comfortable with the way we see the interest being articulated into our market. So therefore, everything as expected. So therefore, we are calling for the next chapter of Metro. And this has implications as well in the way we report figures, but also how we emphasize our strategy. So old Metro, the way we used to report, was substantially a division of Metro Macro, our FSD entities, our property division, and digital. And then you see our Real business entities, the core business, and real.de. The new Metro essentially is the same, but just with a hypermarket business and some other components allocated to it, reported as discontinued operations. And therefore, the emphasis of today's report to you will be on the new Metro. If we look into the guidance, which we adjusted in spring 2018, we had to step down for two reasons. One was the mentioned step up in labor cost. The other was our assessment that we need to change direction in Russia. While on both we are positive about the strategic direction, we had a significant different view on what the profitability impact would be for 17-18. The good news is the guidance we declared in April 2018 has been met. That is true for sales growth and like-for-like sales growth in local currency, as much as it is true for EBITDA. But it's also true that if you look into the details of our figures, it's visible that we have a consistent positive trend in our strategic direction. So look, for example, on HoReCa like-for-like sales. We have been consistently telling you that HoReCa will be one of our key priorities. And we are now 5 years in a row, not only like-for-like positive for the total group on sales as wholesale, but we are also way more productive and better in performance when it comes to selective view on HoReCa. So here we are growing above 3.5%. Last year, 3.7%. Trader development has seen a significant trend change. And here we are showing the trader countries, excluding Russia. I will mention Russia separately in a few moments. We have not been that good in the past, but our formula starts to work, and it works better and better. That's why we were able to post 4.6% sales growth on the trader side. It's also visible that our dependency from non-food is deteriorating, and that's healthy because many of our non-food assortments were complementary, i.e., serving SEO needs. We are not pushing the SEO out of the business, not at all, but it's clear that the share of SEOs will decline as a logical consequence of us focusing on HoReCa and Trader. It's also noticeable that our delivery sales are meanwhile close to 20%, and they are profitable. They are growing profitably, 14% in last fiscal year. This means that while the wholesale number and also the group like-for-like number are in line with our guidance, the underlying performance is significantly stronger, and it's diluted by decline in SEO sales and by decline on the non-food side. Looking into some other metrics, I think it is important to mention that our EBITDA margin has been fairly resilient no matter what happened in the portfolio. If you deduct the special income that we had for the sale of Metro Vietnam in the fiscal year 2015-2016, we have been moving on a very similar level throughout the years. We told you that we will be very much focused on CapEx and on working capital in order to improve cash flow. Now, last year was a significant step change in that sense because we once again could improve CapEx efficiency, and our CapEx ratio came again down to below 2%. Our working capital performance continues to improve, and all in all, our free cash flow conversion is above what we want to achieve on our midterm guidance, which was 61%. If we only focus on wholesale, actually it's 71%, and it shows that the cash consciousness in our business is growing and growing. Now, all of this is only possible if we have the right principles as a company, and therefore, sustainability for us is not a buzzword. It's not something where we feel we need to accommodate just the law or the public attention. For us, it's a business driver. As such, we continue to invest into our sustainability for business improvement. We see many connotations of sustainability leading to a better business quality, and we are glad and happy that we have been recognized as Dow Jones Sustainability Index leader for the fourth time in a row, which is one of a few acknowledgments which we earned again in 2017-2018. We don't take that as a moment to celebrate and just be proud about it. We take that as an obligation to continue to expand our commitment on sustainability, and therefore, we are leaving the year 2017-2018 also strengthened on that. Before I hand over to Christian, let me conclude on the intro. Our business performance, becoming a pure wholesaler, is showing a lot of indicators that the underlying wholesale formula is working better and better. The two target groups, HoReCa and Trader, apparently are responding well to the revitalization of some of the businesses which were not doing that well in the past. Our expansion of business in delivery, but also franchise, is giving us quite some momentum, and we will extend our business activity significantly with a scale-up on digital, which I will explain in a few moments. The year 2018-2019 will be a year where we will intensify all these efforts. It will also be a year where our portfolio will be further optimized. The largest optimization will be the fact that we will become 100% wholesale and give Real a new owner. Having said all of this, let me now hand over to Christian, who will now guide you through the financials.
Thank you, Olaf, and good afternoon from my side. The year certainly brought a lot of change, the majority of which is linked to the increasing focus on wholesale, as Olaf has described. I will therefore talk most exclusively about the financials for the continuing operations from here on. But for me, in the first place, the key achievements from a financial perspective were as set out on this chart. First of all, we have simplified the reporting by splitting the real estate gains from the pure operational business and providing a new regional segment structure. This has made a difference in transparency on the underlying operational development. Secondly, we have achieved an acceleration of top-line growth despite the ongoing Russian transformation, where we were able to reestablish control within a few months. Thirdly, a proactive management of net financial result tax rate and net working capital resulted in strong EPS growth and free cash flow conversion for the continuing operations. Arguably, this was also supported by some one-time gains. All of this has been achieved through focus and simplification, and we continue to strive for more. Before we dive into the financials, let me help with the reconciliation of the new set of numbers. And we fully understand that this is a complex matter, and we are very happy to provide further information if that is required. So when we look at this chart, what we have classified as discontinued operations is called the hypermarket business, and it really comprises of the vast majority of what was known as the segment Real, but it also includes a couple of things from the segment Others, including real estate that is closely attached to the hypermarket business. In turn, we have created a new segment, Others, which combines what was previously known as the segment of Wholesale Others and Group Others. The other IFRS 5-related change is that intercompany relations between continuing and discontinued operations have been adjusted for, which, for example, impact sales in Germany and others. However, this is rather a smaller change, and optically it's important for you to understand, but the magnitude is small. We have still uploaded a reconciliation on the regional view, and again, also on this topic, we are very happy to answer your questions. So if we now move over to the sales and the EBITDA element, basically, like-for-like growth has accelerated from 0.9 to 1.3% despite the negative development in Russia and driven by Germany and Eastern Europe. The growth is again coming from HoReCa, majority of trader countries, or if you look at it from an assortment perspective, it's really very much driven by food sales. Reported growth in euro terms came in at minus 1.4% due to currency headwind that we have seen in Russia, Asia, and also in Eastern Europe. Total sales in local currency, on the other hand, grew by 1.5%. Delivery continued to grow and currently represents a sales share of 18%. We are confident that the targeted 20% sales share will be achieved by 2020, if not earlier. EBITDA, excluding real estate gains, came in slightly lower than last year. Adjusted for negative currency effects of minus 56 million euros, EBITDA grew by 2.5%. We have further realized 128 million of real estate gains that contributed to a total EBITDA of 1.37 billion euros. The gains were predominantly driven by project developments. While we didn't meet our FY17-18 expectations fully of about 175 million in real estate gains, the anticipated gains were merely shifted to H1 of 18-19 and have therefore increased our expectations for 2018-19. Now, on to the regional view to better explain what has driven EBITDA growth. Let me start with Metro Wholesale in Germany. The good improvement in like-for-like growth to 1% is driven by both delivery and also a strong improvement in in-store business. Throughout the year, this was driven by a healthy increase in HoReCa sales from both improved frequency and basket. Reported sales were negatively impacted by store closures, resulting in a slightly lower growth rate of 0.3%. EBITDA grew by plus 3 million euros due to a positive impact of margin mix and also cost efficiency. Moving on to Metro Wholesale in Western Europe. Like-for-like sales were largely stable, while the annualization of the ProaPro acquisition dampened reported growth rate in H2. At the same time, EBITDA was increased by 25 million, driven by non-food reengineering in France and also a one-time gain in Q2. The 39 million euro real estate gain was resulting from the project development in Spain. Moving on to Metro Wholesale Russia, like-for-like sales came in at minus 7%, which was primarily driven by significantly negative like-for-like development in H1 of roughly minus 9%. H2 has already shown first signs of improvement with minus 4.9%. Once again, reported sales were negatively impacted by FX. The EBITDA pressure was mainly sales-related. In H2, the back-office savings started to crystallize while we continued to work on gross margin through the Buy More, Pay Less program and supplier renegotiations. Moving further to Metro Wholesale Eastern Europe. The region continued to showcase strong like-for-like growth, finishing the year with 6.1% growth, driven by the majority of the countries. EBITDA margin came in largely stable, despite industry-wide salary indexation in a few countries from Q2 17-18 onwards, signaling the relative strength of this region. Total EBITDA came in at plus 11 million euros at constant FX. In Q4, we had a real estate gain from a project development in Poland, resulting in a 12 million euro gain. Moving on to Asia, where positive development in all countries resulted in a 4% like-for-like growth. The reported sales growth was negatively impacted by FX developments. The EBITDA margin is largely stable, with EBITDA at constant currency growing by 8 million euros. Last but not least, the segment Others is to be seen as reflected on this chart. EBITDA increased to minus 129 million. This increase is certainly driven by the fact that 2016-17 was strongly impacted by special items, while this year's result was also impacted by the continued expansion of online-related activities. Furthermore, the 57 million gain is related to a project development that happened in Germany. Let me summarize the last slide and show you the comprehensive EBITDA composition for the group. As you can see, all regions but Russia delivered positive growth at constant currency, summing up to a solid growth of EBITDA of about 4%. This growth has fully compensated for the transformation in Russia and gives us a solid backdrop. Now, bridging to total EBITDA, others further contributed around 30 million increase to previous year, bringing us to the 2.5% growth in EBITDA that was previously mentioned. When we now move on to the free cash flow, which has increased by 103 million euros compared to last year. This increase was exclusively driven by significant inflows from net working capital, while EBITDA decreased slightly and CapEx increased marginally. The net working capital development was mainly driven by improved stock days throughout the group, which was and remains a clear focus point. It also benefited from some one-off support as Russia was negatively impacted by the trade law transition last year and China saw some seasonal tailwinds. CapEx, excluding M&A and finance lease, increased marginally, whereby the shift from store into IT and digitization is very visible. There is a more detailed breakdown in the appendix. We continue to open leaner and smaller stores, thereby freeing up CapEx for digital activities. From the full cash flow perspective, the picture looks broadly similar. The operating cash flow came in at 0.9 billion euros, slightly above last year. The positive development in net working capital overcompensated a small decrease in EBIT and higher cash out for provisions, in particular restructuring and termination provisions recognized a year ago and now being utilized. The investing cash flow came down from negative 0.5 billion euros to negative 0.3 billion euros, driven mostly by the acquisition of PowerPro in the last year, 16-17. The financing cash flow changed from minus 0.4 to minus 0.6 billion euros due to higher repayment of debt. Finally, net debt stood at 2.7 billion euros at the end of September, which is slightly lower than 1 year ago. Let's now move back to the P&L view to bridge from EBITDA to EPS. EBIT is largely on the PY level as lower depreciation compensated for the FX developments impacting EBITDA. Net financial results strongly improved due to lower financing costs and an overall closely managed other financial result. The improvement was further supported by some one-off benefits in that other financial result. Tax also strongly improved and primarily was driven by structural improvements, but also supported by some one-time benefits like foreign tax law changes. Overall, this leads to a very significant EPS increase of above 25% to €1.25. Before I hand over to Olaf, let me briefly break the logic of focusing on continuing operations only and bridging to the fully reported EPS. The strong growth of EPS from continuing operations didn't fully translate into reported EPS, as EPS from discontinued operations decreased from negative €0.09 to negative €0.30. This was predominantly driven by the full impairment of the goodwill in the discontinued operations. Adjusted for this non-cash effect, EPS for discontinued operations came in at minus €0.17. The €1.25 from continuing operations and the €0.30 negative from discontinued operations then add up to the reported EPS of €0.95. Again, adjusting this for the goodwill impairment, which is a clear one-time effect, this leads to a reported EPS of €1.08, which exceeds the market expectations. On this basis, we propose a dividend of €0.70 to the annual shareholder meeting. This results in a 74% payout ratio, which exceeds our dividend policy of 45 to 55% of EPS. However, we consider this appropriate as EPS was impacted by the goodwill impairment and the payout is also supported by the cash flow development. Let me now hand over to Olaf for the strategy part.
Yeah, thank you, Christian. And as mentioned before, the focus is solely on wholesale, as that is clearly our future. Just briefly summarizing what I mentioned before, the year 17-18 clearly has driven the clarity of our wholesale profile to a much, much higher level. That is true for our core business with HoReCa and Trader. This is very much true for the various channels we use to serve our customers, and it becomes clearer and clearer in regard of digital. So I will touch every single one of those topics in more detail. Before I do that, I just want to share with you the principle on how we articulate ourselves to the outside, but very much also to the inside, which is we have the privilege to serve the independent business owners, and we have the privilege to claim that we work for them. And this is not only a marketing claim, this is inspiration for the many, many people throughout our organization who know that we can contribute to the success of independent business owners who are so much giving color and inspiration to all of us, is it in hospitality or independent trade. And therefore, the whole declaration, your success is our business, is our guiding principle in whatever we do. And it starts to materialize more and more in numbers. Two-thirds of our turnover, meanwhile, are conducted by HoReCa and Trader customers. Almost 50% actually is HoReCa already. The way we do that has changed massively over the course of the last 6 years. While Metro used to be a standardized shop run by SOP and replicated in as many countries as possible, today we are tailor-made for the needs of HoReCa and Trader in the corresponding countries, and that goes to the product we offer, the services we provide, but also the knowledge we transfer. And following this, the principle on how we look at value creation and wholesale activation picks up on things we discussed before. So without any question, the local value creation plans remain the core of our strategy. They have been developed, they have been assessed, they have been refined on a local basis with fully empowered business units in the corresponding countries, and you see the number of countries in the box with a one. On the other hand, we have enjoyed very substantial growth in two directions. One is delivery, the other is franchise. But we also were aware that our professionalization needs to enhance, and we've spent significant effort in the last fiscal year to ensure that that's working much, much better. And we'll share more insights on that furthermore in a couple of minutes. Number three, not a big surprise, actually an obvious one, but also obvious that Metro can leverage the group scale way better. And I'm very, very happy and pleased that with the new COO on board, Philippe Palazzi, we are taking way more emphasis and way more leadership in making sure that the size of the group and the reach of the group is turned into value. This cannot happen overnight, but it will happen, rest assured. And rest assured that Philippe is putting a lot of leadership with the backing of the whole management board to take much more advantage of those unique opportunities. And number four, we will not stop here. We will go further, and we will open new areas for growth by adding complementary business, which is fully focused on wholesale, but certainly goes way beyond the boundaries Metro was setting itself in the past. So let's look into the way how the formula works. From our point of view, and I repeat that and I insist on it, the value creation success factor number one in our business is our people. We don't run a factory. We don't have a chemical formula. We don't have R&D. What we have is a great team and a great workforce, which we want not only to instruct, but we want to inspire and energize them to go every day a bit further and try to find out new ways on how to not just satisfy, but actually convince customers that we are the partner of choice. If you look into the left of the chart, this is a metric which we are applying since 2011 with Aon Hewitt. At the time when we started to do this assessment, we were at a 60% score on employee engagement index. Industry average is 63. Yes, we are very, very confident that 78 is a great achievement. It's the highest score, of course, in our history, but it should not be the end. It will be the motivator to even go further. We need to do the same thing on the customer side. So we rolled out the Net Promoter Score into all 25 countries. And we are meanwhile using Net Promoter Score as our guiding principle on how to learn from our customers on what they like, what they enjoy, what they love, but even more important, what they don't like and what they miss and what they criticize. And we have a clear, closed issue resolution process to make sure that we are taking all of those remarks very serious. And that is the reason why we are able to grow in the way I described before, both on HoReCa, on Trader, and in summary, on food. So our HoReCa formula shows really strong momentum. And of course, it shows the strongest momentum in Western Southern Europe, because here the share of the business is significantly higher than elsewhere. And that, of course, has also to do with the readiness of an economy. And we are taking this very seriously because we believe that the share over the coming years actually will go up and up and up. We have countries where actually it's up to 75%, like in Italy. Germany, it's still below 50%, but it will go and break through 50% very soon, because in Germany, our destination is HoReCa. No misunderstanding in that sense. Eastern Europe, Asia, and Russia, the share is smaller, and you might then say, well, why would you bother? Well, actually, we are very keen on taking advantage of HoReCa whenever it grows, but then selectively. In Russia, we will take advantage of the HoReCa market in metropolitan areas like St. Petersburg, like in Moscow, like in Kazan, like in Rostov, but not countrywide. And the same applies to selective Eastern Europe and also Asian markets, with one exception. Japan is one of the markets with the highest HoReCa share in our portfolio, where we actually have 86% of our sales conducted on HoReCa. The reasons why we succeed are in the box. I don't want to go through every single one of them. I would like to emphasize, though, that our service level is improving also because we are transferring knowledge. And in most of our places, meanwhile, we run academies who transfer learning and wisdom to young chefs as well as to established chefs. And just to give you an example, Gastronometro in Istanbul, meanwhile, I think is iconic nationwide and well-known as a hotspot for gastronomy, inspiration, and learning run by Metro in Metro Istanbul. We had to get our act together on many things, and we had to make sure that while we are growing in new ways how to build business, we are actually delivering that on the right quality level. Many of you have observed us opening delivery just 10 years ago. Until 10 years ago, it was essentially forbidden to sell through the delivery channel because we would tell the customer, "You need to come to the store." This has changed radically at the point in time where we said, "The customer chooses, not us," which is obvious. But it's also obvious that while we were growing, we were very, very hands-on and maybe sometimes too pragmatic. This has been professionalized along the way over the last years. So now we have 18% sales share. We grew 14%. The average invoice is increasing, and we're tracking the service level, i.e., the perfect order rate that we are delivering to our customers. As much as we are optimizing routing, as much as we are optimizing line items per drop, as much as we are optimizing the assortment that is offered online. One of the key metrics to enhance service level is the order intake through digital. And while in the past we were taking orders by all channels, including email, SMS, WhatsApp, and telephone, we will not stop those channels, but we will promote more and more that our customers provide their orders online. Today, we have doubled the numbers of online order taking to 30%. We have countries like Czech and Slovakia where the online ordering actually is at 85%, and our midterm target must be above 50%. We will be able to surpass that fairly soon because of a solution, which I will explain later on, which is called M-Shop, that is now available in 12 countries and which is a key driver for digitalization. In other words, you can say 1.5 billion of our turnover is fully online. It comes through online ordering and is then delivered to our customers. One of the myths is as well that customers who move to delivery might actually just move from one channel to the other and therefore stop buying at cash and carry. That's not true. Our learning is many of them will become hybrids. Not all of them, but many. And that means that we can go up to as much as like three times of the sales we provide by providing some of the packaged and canned goods on a delivery channel, but still enjoy the visit of the customer when it comes to fresh and ultra fresh, and customers enjoying being at Metro because it's more than just buying. It's an experience, and it's, of course, as well, exchange of learnings with the department manager, but also with fellow colleagues. Very fair to say that on Trader, we have been less successful in the years that were, let's say, at the beginning of the transformation, and you've seen the numbers on the chart I showed you before. This change is substantial. The 4.6% like-for-like growth is driven by a clear dedication for independent traders, predominantly in Eastern Europe, and I will come with more detail, of course, in Russia. How do we do that? Well, we do that, first of all, with tailor-made assortment, with a very clear commitment on price attractiveness, which is fueled by the buy more, pay less. So we incentivize high volume, and in return, we give you best prices. How do you fund that? Well, only with lower service cost, which is a huge change, a step change for Metro to reverse from a generalist to a specialist and have a high emphasis on productivity and service cost. In a country like Romania, we have taken the number of pallets in the store six times up. We had roughly above 100 pallets per store, which we used to sell products to those specific customers. Today, we have more than 600. Why does it matter? Well, it matters because it's a clear indicator that buy more, pay less works extremely well, but handling costs are a fragment of replenishment to shelves. We are symbolically, literally pushing the pallet to the floor, break the package, sell it off, take the empty pallet away, and bring the next pallet in. That's how we can grow profitably also in a sector which by definition, of course, has a significantly lower margin. The way how to think ahead clearly needs to take more advantage of franchise. And also here, it's fair to say Metro has been working on this for quite a bit. But 17-18 has been the year where we have seen significant success. We are growing 10%. We have now roughly 6,500 franchisees. We are in 8 countries with this model. And the effect you can see on the right, taken from Romania, a conventional trade account has like a tenth of what we can conduct with a franchisee trader. 10 times more sales through a much stronger proximity and, of course, a commercial relationship, which we have contractualized, which we have optimized in regard of financial metrics, and which we will digitalize by making sure that traders order through M-Shop, and we are about actually to roll out EPOS trials so that we actually are within the operating system of those franchise customers. Now, we owe you more insight into Russia. And as I've mentioned before, our main priority is rebuild the unique profile of Metro in Russia. Make sure that the market understands we are a wholesaler and take advantage of this unique profile for two very significant target groups. Just to remind you, independent trader target group in Russia is a 76 billion euro market. We run 1 billion with them. Independent HoReCa is an addressable market of 15 billion. We have 500 million with them. So there is huge opportunity for us. And I repeat myself, we are bullish that Metro will be able to double down on the opportunity. And we are quite encouraged with the current trading that we're seeing at the beginning of this new fiscal year. What you see on this chart is we had to make huge changes in spring 18. We brought in a new management team. We concluded by late summer this whole redefinition of the organization, and the team immediately started to work on making sure that the commercial model is enhanced. As a consequence out of that, we saw many metrics work in the right direction. And if we look into the growth of the buy more, pay less assortment, the trend is substantial. It has turned from negative for those respective assortments into slightly negative to actually now slightly positive. The question you might ask is, well, but didn't we see a reduction of momentum from Q3 to Q4? I would like to remind you that we told you that 3.2% negative was substantially supported by two things. One was the World Championship of FIFA, and the other one was our one-time-in-a-year event, which, of course, we will repeat next year, where we invite 22,000 SMEs, and they place their orders. But it's not kind of a recurring thing that comes every month. Fourth quarter looks like, it shows nominally a decline by 3.4% against the trend. But by large degree, this is by conscious choice to stop some of the not effective bulk sales that the team stopped in that fourth quarter. As I mentioned before, starting into the new fiscal year and having an absolute alignment with the management team, the top-line momentum is the one we need to go for. I feel encouraged with the first 2 months of trading, but we will report on Q1 only at the beginning of February. So let's call the quarter once we have closed it. But you'll hear Christian and myself commenting this one with more confidence than in the calls before. In regard of profitability, we will need to invest in the market and we will need to invest into attractiveness. On the other hand, we are able to save costs. And here, our efforts on the shared service center, on the centralized sales support in Zamara, is really making good progress as well so that we can counterbalance some of the investment needed. But it's true. The part of the reason for our guidance for a soft decline on EBITDA is 50% argued by the fact that we expect a softer bottom line in the first quarters of new fiscal year. And for the full year, EBITDA in Russia is going to be below the year 17-18. We are aiming for and we are pushing for momentum on top line. Once that kicks in, we are also confident we will be able to push forward to focus on bottom line. But first things first, we need to make sure that our top line momentum is coming to a healthy territory. Buy more, pay less is not all of it. With Martin Schumacher and a very strong team underneath him, we are reviewing category by category, and this leads to a significant change. We just have kicked off the first categories, and tea and coffee have been the first to be addressed. Impact is quite solid and sustainable, and we are understanding much better how to address the two target groups I was mentioning, but also how to take advantage of things like own brand, which I will touch in a minute. At the right, you see the fast ramp-up of Fazol. Fazol is our franchise model in Russia, and the benefit for our customers is substantial. That's why we are seeing quite a pull from the market to become associated to this brand. And we have come from a low level of roughly 200 stores at the beginning of the fiscal year, surpassing 1,000 stores in the end of the fiscal year that have been signed and actually meanwhile have been implemented. And also here, the momentum of sales with these contracted customers is, of course, way better than a conventional trader account. Let me focus on two of the key areas that Philippe and the team are working on. One is own brand. We have been criticized for having a fairly low own brand share in the past. And that criticism is not unfair. We are knowledgeable of that. But we also were aware that we need to redefine our brands. We need to redefine the position of our brands, and we need to redefine the reason to exist for these own brands. And on the right, you see the newly launched Metro brands, and way different to the past, they are linked to our brand. Horeca Select has gone and is now Metro Chef. And you see Metro Professional for the non-food side and Metro Premium for the upper end of the segment. Our focus is not just to replace products that are on shelf, but ideally always develop a solution that helps you as a chef to process faster and therefore get significant additional value add. Our aim is to massively increase the sales share. In general, from 24% in HoReCa today to 40% in HoReCa, and a trader from 10% to 15%. Some of you might say, well, can you be more ambitious? Yes, we can, but let's deliver first on those targets. And also, let's make sure that we have a specific reviewed offer of own brands for the delivery channel where they should even excel the performance within the store. Sourcing, of course, is of essence. And yes, we are very, very confident that our international trading offices, which we have for fish, for meat, for fruit and veg, and for non-food from Asia, are already a very strong differentiator. But it will be the case that we will take more scale into our advantage in the years to come on quite defined ranges. We will also optimize packaging solutions and therefore, i.e., reduce cost, but also the plastic utilization. But we will also develop completely new solutions which are urgently needed, like the range for disposable products that will not be sustainable on plastics only. And we already are ready to go for compostable disposable product range. On the right of the chart, not mentioned too often actually in the recent past, but very important for us, are the buying alliances. We have a strong experience, a positive experience with Groupe Auchan on international level. We have teamed up with Casino and Dia, and the four of us have created one of the top three international alliances. It's one-stop shop for FMCGs to contract with us with the organization which we have established in Geneva. But it's also as important to do the same on a national level. And here you see a number of banners that have teamed up with us in various countries to take advantage of better terms when it comes to buying. Digitalization has three dimensions at Metro. The first one is the digitalization of Metro itself. And here we have a dedicated unit that under new leadership has revitalized to a degree that we see more and more convincing innovation. One is M-Shop. I mentioned that before. That's our front end for order taking for B2B customers. Another one, which is going to be a landmark change in the way we run our business, is Metro Companion. Metro Companion will replace the Metro membership card and will digitalize it. This will allow you to scan and purchase in the store. It will give you access to all your invoices. It will give you access to tailor-made offers that are only there for you. It will give us a direct communication channel. We will roll out Companion, Metro Companion, as of January 2019 into two countries, and upon validation of the effectiveness, we want to roll it out to the most significant delivery countries and thereafter to as many as possible. On the other hand, at the right of the chart there, you see we continue to optimize process. Is it process in delivery? By providing an app to the driver that essentially turns the whole handling paperless and therefore drives efficiency, but also things like the fast checkout, which we are piloting right now in Czech, where the customer that is able to scan the product in store can leave the store by just putting the trolley on a balance, and the balance will validate whether there is compatibility with what he scanned and what should be in the trolley, and then the lady or the gentleman is free to go and leave the store without any moment of waiting. So a lot of stuff happening. Just to mention pricing and data science, also very much linked to the commercial initiatives Philippe is pushing. There as well, we will invest some money in 2018-19 because we need to significantly upgrade our capabilities. To the right, story very short, but quite impactful. We will copy our learning from Real Digital into a marketplace for B2B. We have carved out part of the team. They are working since summer 2018 to get ready and launch Metro Markets in summer 2019. Therefore, we will offer a way longer tail of products and team up with thousands of merchants internationally, and as such, give our customers reach to products they never were able to get from one source. But here it is. Metro Markets will be that solution. The third dimension of digital is the digitalization of our customers, and we've been speaking about that for quite a bit. Let me try now to be more precise why it matters so much to Metro and how it will change fundamentally our business model. Number one, the industry we're talking about is huge. 1.8 million entrepreneurs in hospitality in just Europe. They conduct 420 billion of sellout. So it's a huge industry, but technology is rarely used. Why? Well, most of these people don't have a tech background. Rarely they have a business background. But that's not the whole reason. The reason in the past was technology was expensive and not accessible. But what's even more difficult in regard of accessibility is those customers. 1.8 million doors to open to start a conversation is impossible for a startup. Actually, it's impossible for a tech company because the language they speak, the arguments they have, do not resonate with our customers. So how to deal with it? We have spent now 5 years on research. First of all, can digital tools really make a contribution to the business of our customers? And we started the feasibility in 2015 in 5 cities. The outcome is positive, and I will show you a couple of figures in a minute. 2018 was the year where we wanted to demonstrate we can build scale into this addressable market, but in a digital way. And we outperformed our own ambition when it comes to building digital accounts. The pilots have been conducted in five cities, in Berlin, Paris, Barcelona, Milan, and Vienna. We have had more than 500 customers testing more than 100 solutions. Yes, we took them by the hand, and yes, we subsidized the utilization of the tools that they were supposed to apply. At the same time, we asked them for full transparency and full data access to make sure that we understand whether the benefit is there. And on the right of this chart, you see the benefit that is not hypothetical, but it's proven by facts and figures. We can grow your sales by 10% and more. We can improve your cost of goods sold by 10% or more. We can reduce the waste of food by replacing a very personal supply chain planning into systematic supply chain planning. We can significantly reduce the amount of time people need to spend on administrative work, 1 to 3 hours per day. So all of these are good reasons for restaurateurs to become digital. But how do you build a platform that will be able to reach out to them? Here our answer is we need to give them a reason to enter into digital first. And the reason is only through a set of tools that have immediate benefit and actually come free of charge. We wanted to get 50,000 digital presence in 2018. Today, we already have more than 120,000 in less than 1 year. And this could be seen as something which is just nice and a bit of marketing, but look at this one. We are turning our unique reach, and in that sense, I'm very clearly declaring this is the unique reach Metro has into 25 countries, 25 million customers, and a penetration in the hospitality sector of above 60% in Germany, Western Europe, in some countries above 80%. This means we can build the bridge for digital, and that was the reason why we turned our online presence and table reservation tools into a platform, which is called Dish. Dish is now live and running in Germany and Italy, and will be rolled out to other countries at the beginning of 2019. It will be the platform where you as a restaurateur can access digital tools from Metro and from third-party vendors. It will be the platform where you learn what benefits you can create upon applying those tools. And therefore, it will become a community for those independent entrepreneurs who want to take benefit from digital tools. For us, this already shows in the subset of customers that these customers apparently are better in frequency and basket, apparently are open for innovation and business transformation. And that gives us the clear confidence that this will strengthen our core business. And 2019 is the year where we're going to amplify that and build the link from digital and data into more share of wallets and to more buying customers. This is what we will show as the proof for Wholesale X.0 coming to life. So to close here the strategy section, it is important to conclude that from a very standardized, centrally driven business, we have turned into totally localized and almost tailored business country by country. We are not just a wholesaler, but we aim to be a business partner. And therefore, let me conclude with this chart out of the campaign, which is illustrating nicely what we are all about to do, which is contribute to the success of a customer like Lillian, or in other words, your success is our business. And having said that, I conclude the strategy section and hand over to Christian for real estate.
Thank you, Olaf. And in our last step for Metro to fully focus on wholesale, real estate is a very important and also very sustainable building block with a very clear view on the related value creation and crystallization process. This is also shown by the 17-18 gains that are predominantly related to real estate development projects. And yes, there is a relevant spillover of these projects into 18-19. When we look at the overall setting of the value creation, but also value crystallization process at Metro Properties, this is very much in sync with the operating business, as this is the leading entity in that setup. but it can be very, very strongly supported and create separate value with the real estate business. In the first place, this is really linked to our investments. The continuing investments that we do with 15 stores every single year, out of which in the last 5 years about 30% were owned essentially, and we have for the continuing business over 400 stores in our own ownership. This is also very much linked to our first mover advantage in many, many places and linked to us being in 15 out of the 30 biggest mega cities globally having real estate ownership in those places. The development and maintenance part starts very early on in the project life cycle and is most of the times really driven by own people in the first place and even many years prior to eventual value creation but also value crystallization. However, when we then turn into value crystallization, which arguably is the most prominent and attention-gathering situation, we then build that together with external partners or also partially in-house at times. This is very much a pipeline of recurring transactions that we have built over the last couple of years. We have seen that in 17-18 executed in many places, and with the signed, not yet closed transaction in Bangalore, we have put up there India as one of our additional key markets for a real estate development project to have also sustainable gains in that very attractive market. Essentially, and that's what I'm saying with operating business has an important role in that, we always drive for continued presence in the locations where we are because we are also wanting to benefit from the consistent and improved frequency that we are able to generate not only with our stores, but also with the agglomeration and additional development in that area. And essentially that then gets into a real value crystallization cycle where we continue to invest into new stores, into very advanced formats in order to be fully adapted to the various projects and developments in our organization. When we then go into 17-18 and look back on how that matches with our overall real estate strategy, there is a very, very close link to that special project development. When we look at Spain, these are three stores in the Madrid area that we have developed for a long time with lots of push in the store and the agglomeration around it and have been able to conclude a very successful eventual sale lease back linked transaction with a 30 million gain in Q4 of 17-18. What is labeled there with Germany is a key development of a, in the meantime, residential project development situation here in Germany, which also the team in very close collaboration with the city government here has driven forward and has been able to capture very significant additional and incremental value with roughly 50 million also closed in Q4 17-18. India, which is shaded here in gray, which I mentioned before, this is a very attractive development in Bangalore in one of our key stores, which will continue to be in this site in the long run, and that is one of the critical elements there. So we continue pursuing that transaction, and we expect that to close in H1 18-19. But again, India, not only there, but also in other locations, has been put up there right on the map for project development for Metro. And then when you look into the further year ahead of 18-19, but also beyond, we have a fully filled pipeline of real estate development projects in not only the mega cities that you see on this chart, but also in other places. And in light of the spillover that we have from the prior years, which is roughly amounting to 50 million euros, in light of increased project development activity in these critical cities, but also in light of selected sale and lease back transactions to benefit from the market environment, we're very confident in order to also reach the outlook that we will talk about in a minute with respect to the upped real estate gains. Let me with that hand over back to Olaf for the outlook.
Yeah, thank you, Christian. And let me walk you through this fairly quickly now. We want to build on the momentum we sense in our wholesale business and intensify, of course, with the focus on HoReCa and Trader, of course, with the focus to make sure that our recovery in Russia gains momentum in a sustainable manner. and of course by making sure that our way to Wholesale X Point O, the next version of our business model, makes progress and materializes in figures in the new fiscal year. It's the year of the portfolio, so the portfolio will be optimized, and of course the Real transaction is paramount for that. So we will make sure that in this fiscal year our 100% wholesale focus materializes as much as we are accelerating our effort on corporate development and thinking about opportunities, how we can take advantage of some unique position in emerging markets, most likely by assessing partnerships in the respective countries. And then finally, of course, the extension of wholesale is not only digital, but we are also considering the rollout of services. In numbers, it means that our guidance on sales for sales in local currency, total sales, and like-for-like sales, we are now guiding for 1 to 3% growth. So we see a chance to actually continue to build on the good momentum which we had over the course of the last quarters and the last years. It is not necessary, I think, to underline and emphasize how important the sales recovery of Russia is in that sense, but we feel comfortable about that one. Our EBITDA, excluding real estate gains, will come down somewhere in the magnitude 2 to 6%. Main driver for that is the before-mentioned cycle in the Russian recovery, as much as some expenses which we have linked to the other segment, and this is Metro Markets and investment into our own internal digital capabilities. There are further comments on the right. I will not go through every single one of them, but I think it's worth mentioning, and that has also, of course, to do with the postponement of the recognition of one of the real estate gains in the last fiscal year. Our assumption for 18-19 is that we will be in the magnitude of 250 to 300 million. On CapEx, which is related to cash flow, of course, we want to continue the disciplined approach, and we are also want to making sure that our cash conversion remains around our midterm guidance. In regarding of the earnings per share, which of course are important, we expect that they will stay roughly stable, so on the level of 17-18 for continued, but of course we also need to see how FX will play into that. And then before we close it, this is a brief reminder of some upcoming events and showing the calendar of financial reporting for this new fiscal year. I think not too much time to spend now. And let me close in reiterating and reemphasizing what we are all about. Our origin is wholesale, and you've seen now hopefully a lot of good reasons to share in our view, which is wholesale is our future, but it's not wholesale in the conventional way. It's wholesale in the completely redefined version for Metro. And having said that, let's now enter the Q&A session. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And the first question is from the line of Andrew Porteous with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Olaf and team. And just a couple of questions around your guidance, really. When I'm thinking about your, say, the midpoint of your guidance, it seems to imply roughly 50 million decline in EBITDA. Could you just sort of give us an idea of how that splits out between the higher IT costs and the decline in Russia? Because it seems to me that it implies something like 100 basis points of decline in your Russian margin, at least. So I just was trying to understand the phasing around that. And if you could give us an idea of how the phasing of the Russian margin will go through the year, that would be helpful if it's a bit more H1 weighted than H2.
Yeah, of course. So I think your triangulation, of course, is correct. And the split, I think we can comment like this is half-half. So we expect a decline on earnings in Russia against the full year 17-18, like in the magnitude of half of the amount which you mentioned. We will see, though, a cycle which could be that we have more of that in the beginning quarters and then recover throughout the year. Our ambition is to re-show a full change in momentum in 18-19. And as I mentioned, focus one is top line, bottom line softening first, and then recovering thereafter. And the rest is indeed some of the budget which we need to ramp up our Metro Markets venture and some of the expenses which we have to further digitalize the inside of Metro with the tools I mentioned like Metro Companion and some other applications.
And could you also confirm that the guidance, the 2 to 6%, that's in, at constant FX as well? Because it seems like FX probably is sort of another 5% off the numbers at the moment if you take current spot rates.
Well, it is on constant FX against our assumption, yes.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from the line of Dusan Milosavljevic with Berenberg.
Thanks for taking. Hi, Dusan from Berenberg. Thanks for taking my question. I have the three actually to ask you today. The first one is your guidance in your outlook on the Russian market. You kind of discuss the self-help elements of the story. You're not flagging VAT increases as potentially something that can be a material factor in the industry that can drive further trading down. How do you see that, and how do you see that impacting the market? That's the first question. And the second one is on cash flow dynamics. You're guiding for cash conversion to kind of, again, drop down a little bit next year. So maybe from that perspective, if you can talk about what was driving the working capital cash contribution this year from 30 million to 170 million, and within those moving parts that you discussed, is this something that we should expect to continue next year? The second one about cash flow is about the cash tax payments, which now ballooned a little bit above the income statement tax charge. And again, is that something that's going to continue next year, or should that normalize? And the third question is just on the EM strategy and how you intend to accelerate growth there through partnerships. So maybe you mentioned it towards the end of the presentation, but maybe if you want to talk a little bit more, maybe with a focus on China, because that's something we heard a lot of media speculation about. Thank you.
Yeah, let me pick the first one on VAT and then hand over to Christian for the cash flow related questions, and then I can conclude as well on the China topic. Yes, indeed, I think the VAT will certainly have an impact on the cycle of purchases. VAT increase as of January 1st, so we will see some prepayment, I guess, on sales here and there. With our clear focus on the two target groups, however, that we address, and the fact that we have such a headroom to exploit, we should be able to work in a market environment which indeed is not yet favorable. We have a consumer sentiment which is again declining. We have disposable income which is challenged. So in Russia, we will not enjoy tailwind. In Russia, the turnaround and the performance improvement needs to be self-helped. And this is built on our conviction that the B2B direction and the uniqueness in the way we do that and the continued ramp-up, i.e. like things like Fazol, will help us to mitigate some of the challenges ahead in the Russian market. And as I said, I think the progress made so far is encouraging us in being quite bullish in that sense that midterm, our ambition in Russia doesn't change.
Yes, on your question with respect to free cash flow conversion, indeed, with a 71% in the continued business and with a 61% in the total business, we have had very significant progress on free cash flow conversion. That is, as mentioned before, fully driven by net working capital improvements. So the focus that we have on there is very, very strong. If you look into the composition of net working capital, this is driven by both the stock development, but also partially by the payables. I think on the stock development, we have seen a very significant drive and continue to do that in the operating business, incentivizing and structurally driving that down. So there is a relevant part in there that is very much structural and should continue down the road. However, there is also a certain support from an FX perspective in the inventory elements in there. And on the payables, also there is a bit of seasonality and day effect there. So with that massive improvement that we have seen in the last year, the range that we give out for the 50 to 60% for next year, we basically feel comfortable and are driving that heavily from the structural elements as well. On your question with respect to the tax charges, I understand you are asking the difference between here from an income statement perspective and the cash tax charges. This is mostly related to basically pre-structuring of certain real estate development transactions. So the uplift in tax cash charges is only from a one-off nature and should be softened out for the next year.
Then let me pick on the question regarding China. It's unfortunate, yes, but it leaked earlier this year that we are considering options in China. And the reason for that is we are very much convinced of a big opportunity in China. Metro China has developed very nicely over the course of the last years with consistent like-for-like positive development and a solid profitability that makes us pretty much unique in the Chinese food market. But also our brand equity being the leader on food safety and food quality is one that we sense provides more opportunity because the market as such is changing very fast. There's a growing awareness and strong interest of the Chinese consumer for high quality and high food safety. And the question we are facing is how do we take best advantage of that with a good starting point, but also acknowledging that if we would go for significant more, we will need most likely local strong partners to do that. And we are in the very beginning to explore our options. As I said, unfortunately, that was in the media, so we had to comment it. Typically, we only talk about it once we conclude. In this case, it happened earlier. But the nature, I hope I could bring across, it's about optionality to double down on a very strong starting position and a structural change in the market.
Okay, thank you.
Next question is from the line of Bruno Monteyne with Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Good morning, good afternoon. Two for me. If I look at page 37, the amount of price investment that you're showing in Russia is actually relatively small, and it's way smaller than your cost savings, which was a surprise to me. Does it feel right that the level of price investment that you only reinvest a fraction of your cost savings, given the level of sales you have? So how comfortable do you feel that you've done the right level of price adjustments? And my second one is around the press release and how you describe the business. I think I quote from the first page of the press release, you argue that the overall financial year 2017-18 was a successful one for Metro. But obviously, as I know you're well aware, on cash and carry, you had a big profit reset in Russia. In real estate, there was a delay. On Real, you had the deal with the union that didn't go through. And you further decreased profit taxation in the future of the year. I understand many of these things will be outside your control, but I really struggle to see why that would be a successful year for Metro, given all these things that didn't go as that you would have wanted them to go. Can you just comment on how you can call that a successful year? Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Well, on the price investment, I think your observation is absolutely spot on. I mean, this is 17-18, and we replaced quite a bit of promo and bulk sales with the investment into buy more, pay less. But it's clear that our assessment is along what you said, that most likely we need to go a bit further ahead and invest into attractiveness. That means that we will see some softening on the bottom line and therefore a momentum change on the top line. So all in all, I think it's an assessment which we share. On the other hand, the more productivity we gain, the better we can renegotiate with suppliers. And this is happening while we speak. We had a supplier conference in November, right? When I was there in Moscow, the team was conducting a supplier conference. And the readiness to engage into this, because it's a very disciplined channel, it's a very much controlled channel, is good. And therefore, I also foresee that we will be able to change terms and conditions. The reason why we see the year 17-18, despite the fact that we indeed had a setback in Russian profitability, why we see that year as a successful year is outlined in the pages before, where we say in the two strategic target groups, we are able to grow way faster than probably the market has taken notice of. We could improve profitability despite the setback in Russia as a whole on wholesale. We were able to significantly improve cash flow to a level which we have not shown in recent years before. And the readiness to drive further growth both on delivery and on franchise is as strong as never before. And the key indicators that we have that also underline the attractiveness of those channels in regard of share of wallet, but also profitability, are very sound. So therefore, yes, we do see that the year as a whole for us on the wholesale side was significantly successful. Now, on the real side, to be clear, yes, we bite the bullet of a step up on labor costs. But just to be very, very precise, with a step change on tariff, we have the breakthrough. It's probably not as visible at first glance, but it's the breakthrough for the real transaction. Without this tariff solution that was implemented between April and June, we would not sit here and say that in the fiscal year 18-19, real can go into new ownership, because a 30% disadvantage on labor costs on a sustainable basis is simply not feasible for value creation. So yes, I call that a success, although it's fair, it was very painful to take the step up on labor increase, which was the consequence of us canceling the contract with the union, just to make the readiness complete for the real transaction. I don't call that a setback. I call that progress.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Fabienne Caron with Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Three questions from my side. The first one on Real. Do you have a minimum price under which you won't be ready to sell? The reason why I'm asking is that in the balance sheet that you show for Real in your annual report, it's quite a high leverage business. That's why I'm wondering if there's a price under which you won't be ready to let it go, and if yes, if there's a B plan. The second question on Germany, why we didn't see margin improvement this year? Because your like-for-like for the full year were positive. You talked about improvement in the HoReCa business. So I was wondering why didn't we see it through better margin in Germany? And finally, on Russia, I think for us it would be, we talked a lot about trader, but I think it would be useful to us if you could break down the -7% in Russia between trader, HoReCa and SEO, and maybe to give some qualitative comment regarding how the HoReCa and the SEO business developed in Russia, please.
So let me start with Real, and the price is a function of the negotiation, honestly, and we're at the very beginning of it. But what I can give as kind of a guidance on how we think about price, there's substantial real estate value that is part of the whole co structure that we are providing now into the market through the data room. Real estate values in Germany are not at the bottom, quite opposite. They are significant, and the momentum for real estate also in retail is very strong. So underpinning the transaction with 65 locations, stores, and another set of locations, in total more than 80 locations, gives a substantial underpin on value. We have an opco, which is profitable, but on the other hand, one can argue there's significant need for the modernization, which we show it works, but there is clear way forward how to optimize productivity and bottom line. Number three is we have one of the most vibrant marketplaces that is around in Germany. And with roughly now half a billion of GMV in the foreseeable future traded on the platform, there's another significant value component. But as I said, we are at the very beginning of the start of the discussion. We are just starting, and therefore we will make our mind based on the dynamics of interest being confirmed and submitted offers being then collected and assessed over here in the process.
Mm-hmm.
On the margin development, Germany, it's clear that yes, we have a nice trend change from negative like for like now into positive, and it's also clear that we are able to grow much better in HoReCa. On the other hand, it's also clear that we need to continue to invest into capability and into format. So therefore, it did not waterfall into the bottom line, and that might be the case for a bit of time, because we see that some of the investment that we incurred in Southern Europe and in parts of Eastern Europe where we are good in HoReCa will need to continue, and we will make sure that the top line momentum doesn't change, but the bottom line might not go up as fast.
Mm-hmm.
With respect to your question on how is the composition of the sales decline in Russia, in HoReCa Trader and SCO, the bandwidth around the -7% that we have seen for the entire business is not too broad, but Trader, as we have indicated also earlier this year, has been one of the, on the one hand, key opportunities down the road, but one of the most challenging areas. And that was one of the key reasons why to implement the BMTL program. And exactly on that, where they have been subdued to the further down to the below the 7% negative, we have seen some better development in Q4 already. With respect to HoReCa, there is a better development than the -7, although we see very clear improvement potential, especially when it's around the delivery element that we are mastering in many other countries. So significant improvement is happening there. And with respect to SEO, they are roughly spot on with the overall decrease in the Russian entity.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Next question is from the line of Arnaud Joly with Société Générale.
Yes, good afternoon, Olaf and Christian. I have two questions. The first one for Real. So you see significant value in real estate. If we look at the profitability of Real, it's still very low, you know, a bit of only 19 million euros in 17. So how can you pay rent? Do you have very profitable stores on the one hand, and on the other hand, some very loss-making stores? If you can give more details regarding how you value real estate. And the second question on Russia. So you mentioned encouraging trend for the first 2 months of Q1. Does it mean that you delivered sales growth, positive sales growth, considering the same assortment? Thank you.
Yeah, let me start with the second one. Sorry, the date for reporting, of course, will be early February. So, I beg your pardon that I would not now go into full detail. But our aim is, of course, to substantially improve the trend, which has been negative to 9%, then -3%, -6% in the fourth quarter. And when I say I see trend improvement, that needs to go closer to the zero mark. Did we see days with positive like-for-likes? We did see days. Is that a trend that I can now say that's the quarter? Definitely not. But what I can say is that the means that we are applying are working. Buy more, pay less is working better and better. The category review has worked out nicely for the first categories, but there are many more categories to go. The Fazal trend continues to improve. The sales productivity per Fazal customer is very healthy. So it's not the time now to give full figures for this first quarter, but I see a substantial change in trend. and we will then report in early February.
With respect to Real, the profitability is there for the OpCo, so even including all the leases. You have the usual portfolio spread, if you will, between very, very attractive and highly profitable stores, a big bulk that is around that normal profitability level for the OpCo, and some that are obviously not performing that well. That's a continuous work that is being done in order to improve those or also have the one or the other reduction then in the portfolio. With respect to the real estate value, we cannot comment on it. With respect to the book values, there is roughly 0.9 billion euros on the books in the discontinued operations as indicated in the document. There is significant development potential in those entities, and that's what you have seen in many of our prior transactions also related to Real real estate, that there is significant value in there. And that's also coming from especially new concept when you just think about the Food Lover concept, where not only there is better rental income also from external tenants in those entities, but also the quality of the locations increases significantly, which is then expressed in a lower yield or a relevantly higher multiple. So the attractiveness of that real estate portfolio is clearly visible, not only to us, but also many people out there.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Maxime Mallet with Deutsche Bank.
A few questions for me. The first one, coming back to Bruno's question about prices in Russia and your comment about the need to further make some investment there. Just to be clear on that, does that mean that you've already started in the past 2 months to invest more in your prices already, or is that, well, not has that not happened yet? And if so, when do you expect you'll start being a bit more aggressive on this matter? The second one is with regard to the margin, which will be down again in Russia next year, and then you expect you'll have a sales recovery and improved purchasing conditions that will potentially enable you to have better margin. Just wondering whether you could share with us what would be the normative level of profitability you expect you can achieve with your model in Russia post the transition you're doing now. The third one would be with regard to Real Cell. There's been press articles about Verdi calling for strikes related to the sale of this asset. Could this postpone or could this disrupt the sale process of Real? And the last one, EP Global Commerce took a material stake in Metro in recent months with a call to go higher. Just wondering whether you could share with us, does this have an impact on your strategy? Have you shared and discussed with them? And well, any information you would be able to give on how you think this is going to work with this new shareholder. Thank you.
Well, yeah, let me take those questions. And first of all, yes, we have been picking up on better terms and conditions for our customers in the first 2 months. And therefore, as I said, we are more active in the Russian market for the sake of making clear that our business proposition and attractiveness changes the momentum on the top line. So when I talk about the upcoming quarters and the shape of the development, yes, price investments already play a role for Q1 18-19. So the margin will be down for this year, and I think we will see a stabilization and a fully controlled business throughout 18-19 with a much stronger B2B profile. For the time being, I would not change my view on the midterm possibility, which was that we can recover on the margin side. But I would dare to say that this is something for review throughout the year. Why am I still not deviating from past comment? Because our uniqueness to play in the wholesale sector is still given. And we just need to make sure that we are not compromising by no degree on that opportunity, and then we should be able to recover on the earnings quality, not only, by the way, through the terms and conditions that we negotiate with the industry, but by better productivity, higher share of wallet, and a better mix that we are selling to those professional customers. When we come to the question of Real and the strikes, I want to share with you just one observation. When we changed the tariff in June 2018, we were told we will not be able to hire people because the union will impose through Works Council the contract signature with new hires. The fact that we hired more than 3,600 people speaks a language, and it tells you that our organization, the associate level and the leadership level, is very much committed to the future of Real, and they don't want to burden that through strikes. So strikes that were announced in the recent past have been fairly minimal in impact. We kept all stores open. We kept all operations open. So it has had a minimal impact so far, and I don't see that that will change. In regard of our new shareholder, there has been one meeting, which was a get-to-know and a very diplomatic meeting, a lot of courtesy, a lot of, I think, good discussion about the company itself and the way forward, but it was just one meeting, and of course that will change with the fact that our new shareholder has increased his shareholding, and at a certain point of time I expect also will be part of our governance, and therefore communication 2019 will then increase.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Kiranjo Greval with Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hi, I've got two questions. Firstly, can we quickly go over the Russian profitability timings for next year? You're saying H1 will probably see a hit followed by a potential improvement in H2. But within H1, Q2's got a very low margin base because of last year's warning. So should we expect Q1 to take most of the weight of that year-on-year EBITDA margin cut you've sort of alluded to for Russia? And then the second question is, what are the cost savings left for Russia? Maybe just some color on what you've done so far and what we should expect for the coming year. Thank you.
Yeah, the shape is the way you describe it obviously makes sense. I mean, Q1 is the most likely weakest quarter in the sequence of quarters. So we would expect that there the impact is stronger than in following quarters. Also, given the nature of the strong impact we had on Q2, as you rightly pointed out. So therefore, yes, that is the sequence. On the cost-saving side, we are ramping up the shared service center in Samara. And Christina Peterman, she's the CFO of Metro Russia. She's reviewing, together with operations, all kinds of admin functions that we can consolidate and run from one central place. So therefore, a lot of stuff has been done, but we are not yet there to say cost efficiency cannot be improved further. So the team, while we have all hands on deck and strongest priority and emphasis on the commercial revitalization, it's clear that there is also more room for cost savings. Some of that needs a bit more lead time. Therefore, as well, this will not be available to compensate for some of the margin invest in the short term.
Are you able to give either some sort of size guidance on cost savings? Are you halfway through? And potentially, how many more quarters of cost savings do we have? Thank you.
Well, the way the team is thinking about this and the way the experience, the new leaders that joined the team, Patricia Ney, Martin Schumacher, in combination with Jerry and Christina have, is clearly set for continuous improvement. I think we will not stop. I dare to say that the opportunity on certain functions, admin probably will be concluded in 18-19, but I see more opportunity on the supply chain side and other areas, including operations, store operations. So it's difficult, beg your pardon, to say this will be completed and finished just in four quarters to come. I dare to say it will never stop because we will always find a new innovative way on how to reduce OPEX.
Okay, thank you.
Our last question for today comes from Christian Bruns with Pareto Securities.
Yes, hello. And I have a last question on the real estate guy gains you are guiding for. It's 250 to 300 million for the current year. Did you also change your view on how much gains from real estate is a sustainable number? And maybe a second question on the financial result guidance. There you guide for a higher worsening of the financial result, and I think that you should expect a cash in from Real, maybe a loss, but a cash in. So shouldn't the financial result not improve in the light of this?
Yes, happy to answer. With respect to your real estate question, I think I've described before that very much the project developments, those are the key elements that we will see over the next couple of years from a very broad set of assets in the portfolio. So the significant hike that we have in 2018-19 in our expectation is really driven to a certain extent by the spillover, the roughly 50 million, and then also by accelerated project development activity and, as mentioned before, some surrounding sale and lease back topics. So there is no adjustment to the medium-term sustainable level of project development and real estate gains, which is in the roughly 150-170 million mark. With respect to the financial result, that has been very much driven by significant work on reducing the impact of FX volatility on our results. Still, with a very broad portfolio that we have, there is always going to be some volatility in there. And yes, there has also been the one or the other topic that has been supportive on financial result in the last year. With respect to your question on how that links to Real, to be honest, that certainly would not be anything that we would be reflecting in that soft guidance perspective. It is a transaction that will then certainly have an impact on many lines of our financial statements, but too early to comment and to give any sort of indication on it.
Thanks.
Well, as far as we see, there are no further questions. Then thank you all for dialing in and participating in this conference call for annual results 17-18. Wish you all now a good time until Christmas and then a good start into the new year. And talk to you latest in February. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.